Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
You are unmuted.
Now, in addition to those distances there depicted in that exhibit, sir, have you also looked at a mileage or distance between, the first up there was as far as 34 Fairview Road to One Meadows Avenue, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that gave you sort of 3 different routes of travel, is that correct?
Yes.
And the minute of the max was 22 to 26?
Correct.
Now, if you were to add that as an additional sort of distance travel to the 36.1 to 38.8 that you had calculated, how much of a difference does that make?
Between the two min-maxes?
Yeah.
Only a 2.7.
And as far as your analysis that we're about to discuss, adding in that approximate points, whatever miles, how much of a difference does that make to your analysis and ultimate conclusions in regard to the VCH or vehicle control history data?
As we're going later. But so the 36 is just within the realm that she could have traveled 36. The odometer mileage is odometer mileage. So 36 is 36. That's what's on the vehicle. So within the realm of possibilities that the vehicle could have traveled 36 miles after the 2 triggers that are in this vehicle.
Now, with respect to that minimum and max as far as the 36.1, 38.8, what, if any, relationship that have to the difference in the odometer readings that you observed between when you conducted a braking test and when you observed these 2 triggering events that you were talking about at the earlier mile?
I said, no difference. The odometer mileage is 36.
And so I guess what I'm asking, sir, is the 36 miles, is that within the range of the 2 triggering events that you were just talking about?
Yes, it was.
Now, as far as within your report and your analysis, did you come up with some sort of a label as far as these 2 different triggering events that you observed?
Yes, I did.
And that incorporated the mileage, is that correct?
Correct.
And that was 12,629, is that correct?
Yes.
As far as any further label that you put on it, how did they?
I laid them as in when they occurred. One's 12,629A and the other one's 12,629B.
And with respect to the A and B, which one occurred first?
The A occurred first.
May I approach, Ron?
Yes.
Sir, show you another document. Ask you to review that before we finish.
Okay.
And do you recognize that?
I do. It's okay. The data chart from the 12,629 miles A chart.
May I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm off to introduce.
No objection.
Okay.
The 590.
Again, if I could just have a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
May I return this to the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Report submission.
Yes.
Okay. Sir, with the document before you, what's now up on the screen, do you recognize that as what's now been marked in the exhibit?
I do.
And if you could describe to the jury sort of what these rows indicate as far as what information is there, and if you could, using the laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to what, if anything, of significance you observe in this as far as 12,629 miles A.
Okay. So each row starting from the top is the vehicle control history time, which is the time that's recorded in the module itself or in the software that gets recorded as each time, and it's recorded as seconds. This time is the time from the start of the key cycle. So it starts off with 652.8, and each one is incremented in approximately half seconds increments up to, let me show it right here where the trigger, this is what's called where the trigger happened. So right here is where it kind of goes from 4.5 to 4.6, and then goes up to 5, and everything after that is about half second increments from each other. Recorded 10 seconds of time, which is labeled in this one total time of 10 seconds. And I'll just put time from trigger, just kind of label it back to, here's the trigger right here. And that's the time between each one. Sorry if I can read this right. And right here, this is the vehicle speeds. The blue is just labeled because that's the speed. Zeros are labeled as a light blue is zero. So if I could read. So this starts from, shows that the vehicle is traveling at 9.9 miles per hour. It's slowing down to about zero right here, and then stops for that time, and then increases back speeds back up to. It goes up to 6.2, and then slows back down to zero, and then back up to 1.7 to, I think it's 8.7. I read that right. And next below four is just miles per hour to kilometers. This is the accelerator opening ratio, which is really where this trigger comes from, because the trigger is labeled as the accelerator pedal opening angle is medium to higher immediately after shifting to reverse. All right, they label it as R.
If I could copy there, just yep. As far as the accelerator pedal opening angle, right. Can you explain to the jury sort of what that term means and what how that relates to sort of the operation of?
So the accelerator pedal is, you know, the part where everybody puts the foot on and gets the vehicle to go. So the pedal, so this is what's showing how far the pedal was actually pressed by the operator of the vehicle. And that gives you a percentage of that. So if it was, you know, off zeros, not pressed, and 100%, it's all the way down. So they label the trigger, I think 30% is medium to higher. And this way Toyota labels it. So then that's where you'll see the trigger is around 31.5%. And also shows from the start from the beginning, goes from zero and increases up to 50.5%. And that's 5.7 seconds. That's only, you know, a little over a second past the trigger. It's up to 50% and then back off and then back onto the accelerator again up to 34%.
Now, as far as this data is concerned for the VCH data from the Toyota text, what if any information are you able to glean as far as directionality, as far as forward, reverse, left, right, things like that from this data?
So on this label right here, so it shows the shift position signal. One is forward and two is reverse. So this right here is showing the vehicle was in drive and going forward, and then the vehicle got shifted into reverse and then back to drive again.
Now, from your experience and from your training when it comes to interpreting this type of data, do you have any opinion as to sort of what type of maneuver or what type of actions the vehicle was taking during the course of this triggering event?
Yes, this appears the vehicle was slowing down and making a U-turn, because also the other thing into it, it shows steering signal, and the steering wheel showed that she was driving left and then right and the back left again, and also when she's on the brake switch.
Okay. Ms. Gilman, you take that down. And Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Sir, if I could vote.
Absolutely.
Yep. The document that I've just handed you now, do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that?
It's the one, the data chart from my report for as labeled as 12,629 miles B.
So that's the second triggering event within this same mileage reading on the odometer, same key cycle?
Correct.
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Home office, introduce the minutes and exhibit.
No objection.
Okay. Exhibit 510.
Again, just one moment, Your Honor. May I approach the witness?
Yes, and for the sake of taking the best use of our time, if they're in evidence for the rest of this afternoon, both of you can then just ask to just go ahead and put them up and not ask for permission.
Thank you.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could. And it's your call, you recognize what's up on the street now?
I do.
This is the VCH data chart from that day mileage or the second triggering event as far as 12,629 miles peak, correct?
Correct.
And again, this is in the same odometer range as well as the same key cycle as what was just up on the screen as far as 12,629 miles A, correct?
Yes.
This occurred after A, is that fair to say?
Correct.
Now, similar to before, when it comes to this VCH data up on the screen, if you could, using the laser pointer, demonstrate to the jury what, if anything, of significance you note as with respect to this date.
So for this one, same label as before, as we said. The vehicle control history time is, I can see that, the trigger time is 1,142.2 seconds after key cycle. And this one shows all the same thing, 10 seconds of data. And let's go to the vehicle speed on this one shows that she's slowing down. It's 13.7 miles per hour and gets down to zero. Then she's down to zero for a while, and then the vehicle speed increases up to 24.2 miles miles per hour at its max speed. Then it goes down to 23.6 as the last two labels. And the accelerator pedal angle at this point at key trigger is 36.5 and increases up to 74.5%. And it stays around 74.5%, 74, 73.5, and 74.
Now that's 74.5% as far as the pressure being applied to the accelerator pedal, correct?
Correct.
And with respect to that 74.5, that's about 3/4 down, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, with regard to this data from 1269 miles feet, what, if anything, are you able to tell from this data as far as when that occurred in relation to 12629A?
So they occurred about approximately 8 minutes. So 1269A occurred 8 minutes prior to the other one, and they both occurred within the same, on the same odometer mileage.
Now, with respect to the duration of the data that you were able to obtain from this one, specifically 12629 miles B, what kind of duration of data are we looking at in this particular table or chart?
What, say that again?
How long a period of time does...
So this is from the start of key cycle, or just this one?
Just this one.
Okay, so this is 10 seconds of data.
And with respect to that 10 seconds of data, as far as the 24.2 miles per hour, when does that occur within the 10 second data for this particular event?
So the 24.2, as I'll point out, is right here. It's actually around the 9 second mark.
Now, similar to the other charts for A that was up on the screen a moment before, is there an indication as far as the accelerator pedal opening angle?
Yes.
And what, if any, significance does that have, or what, if anything, does that indicate to you from this data?
It shows that the accelerator pedal angle went up to 74.5%. So as out of 100%, it went up to 74.5%.
Now, with respect to directionality for this, what, if any, data is contained within this chart in respect to that?
Yeah, so on the bottom row, it shows the steering signal. It just shows slowing down zero, it's 0.5, 9, 13.5, 13.5, I think it's 13.5, 0, 4.5. And that's, we're talking about steering wheel, how far does the steering wheel move from left to right? So that's the degrees of a steering wheel angle.
Now, as far as when the vehicle is shifted sort of from drive or neutral or park or whatever it was, at some point, is there an indication in this data set on this table as far as when the vehicle was placed into reverse?
Yes.
And how far into this 10 second data set was the vehicle placed into reverse?
At 4 seconds, it's the right here.
And so am I correct then that there is a 5 second difference, 4 seconds when it's placed in reverse and 9 seconds approximately when it achieves that 24.2 miles per hour?
Correct.
Now, as far as the 74.5% pressure that's placed on the accelerator pedal, when is that recorded in seconds in relation to the 10 second data set on the, in this data?
74.5 starts at the 8 second.
Now, as far as this trigger is concerned, I understand from your testimony that the maximum speed is 24.2. Is that correct?
Correct.
And what is the vehicle speed reported at the end of this 10-second data?
23.6.
Now, as far as the vehicle being in sort of different sets, as far as drive, reverse, things of that nature, what, if anything, did you observe within this data set as far as how it is at the beginning, how it changes at all? What happened in regard to that in the data set?
So this one shows that the vehicle was in drive. It starts off in drive. It's slowing down to zero, and it goes to zero, which is neutral. Then goes down. Then it goes into reverse. So it's going straight and stops. Then it's placed in reverse, and then goes back. Goes in reverse.
Now, as far as the reverse is concerned, you indicated there's also some steering angles that are recorded with this data.
Yes.
And what, if anything, was recorded in this 10 seconds of data? Specifically, I'm asking from the time that it goes to reverse to the end of the set, the end of the data set. What, if anything, do you observe with reference to the change in the steering angle of the steering wheel?
It does not change much. It's only 13. I think the far it goes is left is at 13.5%. So that's only, if a steering wheel is a circle, the whole circle is 360 degrees. So 13.5% is only, it's still fairly straight in the vehicle at 13.5%.
So from this data, this vehicle is backing up in the manner of about 5 seconds or so in a fairly straight line and achieves a max speed of 24.5 miles per hour, correct?
Correct.
And even at the end of this data set, the vehicle is still traveling approximately 23.6 miles per hour?
Correct.
Now, as far as the small deviation steering that you were testifying about, based on your training and experience, what, if anything, would cause?
Well, the steering wheel was obviously caused by operator traveling only a small amount, about right now, up to here. So it's only just operator steering at those small deviations.
You want to make a approach?
Yes.
Grab that one.
There you go.
Another document, you recognize that.
I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
It's a more of a closer up snippet of that document that I have attached to my report.
And Your Honor, may I approach
Yes. Our
practice. I'll proceed to do that as the next exhibit.
No objection, Your Honor.
You can go ahead and publish it.
Trooper Paul, from what's depicted up on the screen as this next exhibit, if you could, using the laser pointer, just direct the jury's attention to what, if anything, of significance you observe in this portion of the data.
Yeah, so I circled in my in here the drop from 24.2 to 23.6, and also the steering signal went from a left at 4.5 to a right 4.5, so positive to a negative. And also the same thing with the cellular opening ratio kind of stays consistent at 74%.
May I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
Borrow that back. Yep. And show another document.
Okay.
Do you recognize that?
I did.
What do you recognize that to be?
It's a vehicle control history distance chart. I have attached. I calculated and attached to my report.
And may I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm all
no objection.
Okay. Go ahead and publish it if you're inclined.
Paul, well, do you recognize what's up on the screen? It has now been marked as Exhibit 596.
I do.
And again, if you could, using the laser pointer, but let me ask you this first. As far as this table and this information up on the screen, I should have asked you this. How was this table created, and what, if anything, does this illustrate?
Yeah, so this illustrates from the chart of 12,629B. I started from when the vehicle was placed into reverse, and when it immediately goes from zero and travels up to 23.6. Just that's like the last part of that last chart we had.
And what, if anything, were you able to do as far as distance travel, and how were you able to determine that?
So I used the this vehicle speeds and the time and calculated a distance that the vehicle traveled during this time.
And as far as the total distance traveled from the zero to the 23.6 at the end, what was the total distance there?
97.35 feet.
And with respect to the vehicle's maximum speed, as far as 24.2 miles per hour reported within this data set, how much distance had the vehicle traveled prior to achieving that 24.2 mile per hour?
62.51 feet.
Okay. I approach this to retrieve, Your Honor?
Yes.
Now, Paul, with regard to, based on your training and experience, with respect to this type of data and crash reconstruction in general, this particular set of data from, who's the name again? From 12,629 miles B, what, if any, type of collision is that data set consistent with?
Yeah, there's a point there where it appears to be consistent with a pedestrian strike.
And why is it that your interpretation of that data, you feel is consistent with the pedestrian strike?
It's the sudden change of speed that 24.2 to 23.6 and a half second, while the accelerator pedal is still at a consistent 74%. And also the steering wheel angle goes left at 4.5 degrees and also goes right to 4.5 degrees and then goes back to left after that. So right at that spot is something that's consistent with a pedestrian strike.
Now, with respect to Mr. O'Keefe, pedestrian in this collision. What, if any, data are you able to see or review in relation to your reconstruction analysis?
Say, with oh.
As far as Mr. O'Keefe, what, if anything, did you learn about his injuries?
Oh, like what types of injuries he had?
Yeah,
there were blunt force injuries. I mean, it was abrasions or lacerations and blunt force injuries.
And the injuries that you observed or that you were informed about, you learned this from the medical examiner, is that correct?
Correct.
And with respect to the injuries that Mr. O'Keefe was recorded as having sustained, according to the medical examiner, what, if any, relationship did those injuries have to you in relation to a pedestrian collision?
Sorry, say it again.
As far as the injuries that you were informed by the medical examiner that Mr. O'Keefe had sustained,
yes.
What, if any, relationship those injuries have relation to a pedestrian collision?
They are consistent with a pedestrian collision.
And how so?
Due to, we break down each injury to the arm, the lacerations of the arm from the taillight, the dent where the scratches for his hand could be. Those are something that would be consistent with this, in this particular case, with striking the Lexus.
Now, specifically with reference to this case, what, if any, analysis did you conduct with regard to kinematics?
Yes, I did a kinematics analysis in my report. Kinematics deals with the aspect of motion.
And I'm sorry, if you could expand upon that a little bit and explain to the jury sort of what a kinematics analysis.
So a kinematics analysis is, like I said, it deals with the aspects of motion. Pedestrian crashes get labeled in certain types of how they interact. So in this particular case, I kind of labeled it as it's a forward projection crash with a side swipe. And what I mean by forward projection means that when a pedestrian gets struck by a vehicle, well, basically their principal impact forces are above the pedestrian's center of gravity, as in this case where you get the higher back of the vehicle. When you get struck by something like that, it projects you forward in the direction of the vehicle. And in this situation where he you get more strike through the side of the vehicle with on the taillight area, that it projected him to forward and to the left due to this like more of a side swipe manner.
Now, with respect to the you mentioned the height of the vehicle, as far as the shape of the back of the vehicle, what if any relationship that have in regard to you labeling this as a forward projection slash side swipe?
Yeah, due to it being, you know, pretty flat, it's not the front of the vehicle where you have the hood and the pedestrian staying above the hood. It's the back of the vehicle. It's pretty flat and it's pretty higher up.
Now, with respect, you also made aware through your review of the medical examiner's report that there was injury to the back of Mr. O'Keefe's head.
Yes.
And based on your training experience, and in particular to pedestrian collisions, what, if any, significance did that have in relation to your opinion as to how Mr. O'Keefe interacted with his vehicle?
So, yeah, so when you look at the damage, he would have interacted with that left side of the vehicle. And when he got struck by the vehicle on the left side, it would have caused his vehicle to rotate kind of counterclockwise. And then when that rotation, he could turn it into his back, and his back could have struck the ground. I noted at the scene that there was asphalt curbing, which could have somewhere he could have struck his head in there, or somewhere along any of the pavement would have caught damage. Most forward projection crashes have damage on both sides of the body.
Why is that?
Due to them get projected forward. So they get hit from behind, they have damage to the back, and then when they get projected forward, they get damage to the front. So, I mean, in this case, he got projected and got spun counterclockwise due to where he got impacted the vehicle.
Now, with regard to the vehicle speeds, kinematically speaking, from your analysis and respect to that, what, if anything, can you say in relation to, just in general terms, as far as the pedestrian collision is concerned, how much of that vehicle speed would a pedestrian be assuming in the context of a pedestrian collision with forward projection?
Forward projection will have almost 100% speed post-impact. And more, like I said, in this case, it's more the fact that he didn't get 100%, like his center mass didn't strike the vehicle, so he would not have been thrown 100% of the vehicle speed post-impact. He would have, his right side would have sustained the vehicle speed, and that would cause him to spin out. So as opposed to traditional forward projection, if he was right there in the middle of the vehicle, he would have got projected forward, and he would have sustained his full body, would have sustained the vehicle speed.
Is that abnormal as far as the sort of forward projection type of pedestrian collision? And what I'm going to ask is specifically to not having any contact with sort of the bottom of the vehicle or being run over or something like that. Can you expound upon that a little?
Yeah, due to the sideswipe manner that projected him off to the left, it wouldn't show that the car would have ran over him and traveled over him. Like traditional, yes, so due to the situation in this scene where he got projected to the left and body rotated, it would have rotated away from the vehicle and his body would not have traveled under the vehicle as you do in like most live traditional forward projection crashes. The vehicle would get tracked forward ahead of the vehicle and that vehicle could possibly travel over that pedestrian.
So that's not what you found in this particular pedestrian clip, correct?
Correct.
I know you've mentioned it a couple of times, but if I could ask you just to expound a little bit, if you're talking about center of mass and how that relates between sort of a pedestrian and a vehicle in a pedestrian type collision.
So pedestrians, almost every object has a center mass. Pedestrians is the same. So a pedestrian center mass is essentially obviously the half the body, and you would also put down, it's around the chest area, just below the chest area would be a center mass for a pedestrian, and they all range based on height and the body shape.
So where on someone's body typically would a center of mass be located?
Usually just around the chest area or just below the chest area.
Now, if I could turn your attention to all back to February 1st of 2022, when you were at the Canton Police Department, you mentioned that, or you testified earlier at some point that you went outside to an asphalt roadway surface and conducted some forward acceleration and rear acceleration brake test, correct?
Correct.
Now, in addition to that, what, if any, other testing did you do with respect to that vehicle on that particular date in that location?
We checked the cameras and the back. We did backup visibility analysis with the cameras and the vehicle.
And again, if you could, just in general terms, describe for the jury, when you say visibility analysis, typically speaking, what are you doing in a visibility analysis?
In the visibility analysis, we are trying to see what an operator would see in their vehicle. Looking for, in this particular case, we were trying to see if the operating vehicle would be able to see a pedestrian behind the vehicle. And also in this, where we have backup cameras, we're trying to look at the cameras and see what would the cameras pick up as we would go into reverse.
And in fairness to the defendant, at this particular time when this visibility analysis was conducted, it was during the daytime, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Your understanding of crashes that had occurred at night, correct?
Correct.
Now, as far as a visibility analysis, typically, would you be looking to recreate as close as you can to the conditions at the time that the collision occurred?
In most typical cases, yes.
And why were you not able, were you able to do that in this case?
We were not.
And why?
Due to was most, like you said, like I said, it's mostly done when we're trying to see what a pedestrian, an operator would see a pedestrian. It's mostly done because it's an accident, but not at times when it's like an intentional act. We don't, visibility is not an issue in this situation. We were just more want to make sure that the cameras worked and the backup sensors all worked in the vehicle.
Now, as far as this particular visibility analysis that was conducted in this case, how, if at all, was that memorialized?
It was recorded when the crime scenes, trooper recorded it.
My apologies. Before I get to that, sir,
okay.
I could turn your attention just back to the text stream just for a moment. Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
So I'm showing you a series of seven photographs. To ask you to look at those. Okay. And first, I'm just going to ask you generally if you recognize those.
Yes.
And what do you recognize those to be?
It's the inside of the vehicle. Appears to be taking out the showing the taking out the infotainment system.
The what system?
Infotainment system.
And the last photograph there, what, if anything, does that depict, sir?
That is the module for the infotainment system.
And what, if any, involvement did you have in respect to this investigation in regard to the infotainment system?
I didn't have anything. That was Trooper Nick Marino's through the infotainment system in this vehicle.
And you indicated earlier in your testimony that you had training as it relates to Burla, correct?
Correct.
And what, if any, relationship does Burla have with respect to the infotainment system?
They have tools that to forensically diagnose the infotainment systems.
And if you know, are you familiar with whether or not that was able to be accomplished in this particular case?
It was not.
And do you know why not?
Because they had to go to, I think Burla didn't have the equipment, so they went to a...
Your Honor, may I approach?
Yes.
Now, as far as those photographs, they appear and after portrayal of what you observed in the vehicle during the time that you were conducting your testing.
Yes.
Your Honor, Commonwealth seems to introduce them as the next seven exhibits.
Any objection, Mr. Jackson?
I'm sorry, I was writing a note. Were those five photographs?
Seven.
Seven.
Seven. No objection.
Thank you. And, Your Honor, with the court's permission, if I could...
Yes.
Now, Ms. Gilman, if I could have the photograph labeled B-82. And, Trooper Paul, do you recognize what's up on the screen and has now been marked as Exhibit 597?
Yes.
And what part of the vehicle are we looking at in this photograph?
That's the steering wheel.
And, Ms. Gilman, if I could have B-83. Trooper Paul, do you recognize what's now up on the screen and is marked as 598?
Yes, I do.
And if you could, using the laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to what, if anything, of significance you observed in this part of the photograph...
That is the infotainment system.
And as far as the infotainment system, when you were operating that vehicle, what, if anything, was displayed on that screen within the infotainment?
If you were in drive, it just said, you know, the radio navigation stuff. But if you're in reverse, that's where the backup cameras and sensors would be.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have BED. And Trooper Paul, do you recognize what's up on the screen as Exhibit 599?
Yes, I do.
And what, if anything, are we looking at in this?
That's the push button start, the ignition.
That's how this vehicle is started. It stopped essentially as a push button start. Is that correct?
Correct.
Gilman, if I could have BED. Trooper Paul, do you recognize what's up on the screen as now marked as Exhibit 601?
Yes.
Using the laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to what, if anything, you observe of significance in this.
Yes, that's the infotainment system. It's on, show satellite here. Looks like it's that's the navigation.
Okay. Gilman, you can take that down. Now, if I could take you back just for a second to the VCH data and kinematics of what you're testifying about just a moment ago. You had mentioned that with respect to the injury to the back of Mr. O'Keefe's head that is consistent or could have been caused by striking his head on the part of pavement or the curbing. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, as far as your training and experience in pedestrian collisions that you responded to investigated on prior occasions, as far as weather, as far as the coldness of the ground being frozen, what, if any, impact that have as far as in relation back in this room.
Objection.
Sustained.
Now, as far as the visibility analysis that you were conducting on February 1st, you mentioned that was memorialized with photographs as well as video. Was that correct?
Correct.
The video that was taken, sir, was that the interior of the vehicle, exterior of the vehicle, or both?
I believe it might have been just the interior.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Sir, I'm showing you two discs. Okay. Recognize those?
Yes.
And those are the recordings of the visibility or the braking and acceleration tests from February 1st, both interior of the vehicle, exterior of the vehicle. Is that correct?
Yes.
May I approach again, Your Honor?
Yeah.
I'm on the seduce
and no objection.
So for
before we get to those videos, Trooper, may I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
So I'm showing you another series of these photographs that I showed them a couple when you finish. And do you recognize what's depicted in those photographs, Trooper?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize those to be?
Those are photos from the backup sensor, backup cameras and sensor tests.
May I approach again, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm going to take the deuce in a minute.
Okay. No objection.
And this gentleman, if I could have a pack of photograph 612. We're all set for. Trooper, if you could, please describe to the jury what we're looking at in this photograph that's now been marked as Exhibit 606.
Yes, this is the view from the operator as they would turn around and look to the back of the vehicle.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2616. And Trooper Paul, do you recognize what's up on the screen and has now been marked as Exhibit 610?
Yes.
Can you please describe to the jury what, if anything, we're looking at here?
Yes, that's the view inside the vehicle showing the infotainment system and the backup cameras on it.
Now, as far as the backup cameras on this particular vehicle, what kind of view was able to be portrayed, or what did you observe on the screen when you placed the vehicle on the first?
Yes, so this has a straight backup camera and also has a 360 overhead view of the vehicle.
And as far as the cameras within this vehicle are concerned, are we talking about one single camera, or how many cameras are encapsulating the 360 degree camera angle view?
It has the front and the sides and the rear cameras.
Now, if you could, using the laser pointer, just draw the jury's attention, direct the jury's attention to where you're talking about as far as the screen is concerned, depicting that camera angle view.
Okay, so the one on the left, that's the backup camera. And the one in the middle here would be the 360 overhead camera.
Now, in addition to what's depicted on screen right now as far as the vehicle on the 360 overhead, as the vehicle travels, what, if anything, in addition, is depicted on that particular portion of the screen as far as the 360 overhead?
It shows a sensor, and that sensor shows up in the area where the object that it gets closer to.
And the sensor that you're talking about, how is that depicted on the screen?
It's a little red, like, blip or a little bar that would show up on the camera itself.
And is that something that appears as you approach an object from either in front or behind or something else?
Correct. As you approach the object, the bar will, blink and will go get faster as you get closer to the object.
Now, with respect to the system overall, in addition to the visual cues picked up on the screen, what if any auditory cues are also part of this system?
It will beep at you, and it will, as you get closer to the object, it will beep faster as you get closer to it.
And as far as getting closer to an object, the beeping that you're talking about, it increases in speed or rapidity, is that correct?
Correct.
And how does it, what if anything does it do as far as the volume of the beeping that you
have? I guess it would increase as it would get faster.
So it gets faster and it gets louder as you get closer to an object.
Yep.
Now, with respect to sort of the middle of the screen here, up on the dashboard, what if anything do you observe there, direct the jury's attention? What if any devices are up there right now?
Yes, so right here, this blue device, that's the V-Box Sport that I attached to the windshield.
So that's something that you attached to the vehicle. It's not necessarily something that was in the vehicle when you began to operate it around.
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2618. And Trooper Paul, if you could describe to the jury, or using the laser hoods, draw the jury's attention to what, if anything, is significant to observe in this portion or closer up image of the screen in the center column.
Yeah, so this is one on the left here is the backup camera, and the one in the middle is the 360 overhead camera. The bars and lines are showing the path of the vehicle.
Okay. Ms. Gilman, you can take this. I may have a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
Now, Trooper Paul, as far as during this visibility analysis that you conducted, you testified earlier that you were primarily concerned with sort of whether or not the cameras and the auditory and visual cues work properly with this vehicle and this system, correct?
Yes.
During the course of your running these sort of forward, back, reverse acceleration, braking tests, as well as the visibility analysis, what, if anything, did you observe with relation to functionality of the cameras and the visual and auditory cues?
Everything seemed to be working properly.
Now, when you were operating the vehicle on February 1st and you shifted the vehicle into reverse, what would then sort of occur with the screen in the center of the dash?
It would change from the navigation to the backup cameras.
And how long a period of time did that take as far as you shifted from drive to reverse on a number of different occasions while you were doing your test, correct?
Yes.
And so how long a period of time are we talking about between the time that you shift the vehicle from drive or another gear to reverse for those screens to then display both the rear backup camera camera and 360 overhead?
It's fairly instantaneous, very quick.
Now, at some point during the course of the visibility analysis specifically, what, if anything, did you place behind the vehicle during your visibility analysis?
It was like a punching bag dummy.
And where did you replace? Where did you place that in relation to the vehicle?
Along its right rear.
And as far as that punching bag dummy was turned, about how far up off the ground over top of that?
I'm not exactly sure the exact height of it. Maybe my height or taller.
And with respect, your height, sir, how tall are you?
5'6".
So it was at least 5'6", if not taller, is that correct?
Correct.
And with respect to that, placing it behind the vehicle, after it was placed behind the vehicle, at some point, were you inside of the vehicle?
Yes.
And when you were inside of the vehicle and that was outside of the vehicle, what, if any, visual observation were you able to make with respect to its placement? And it's in the right rear passenger side of the vehicle, is that correct?
Correct.
What, if any, observations were you able to make as far with respect to that item or exemplar that was placed out?
It would have been invisible in the cameras.
Now, with respect to the visibility analysis that was conducted with respect to that, let me ask you this first. When I say exemplar, so exemplar pedestrian, can you explain sort of what that term means and as how it relates to ability analysis?
So an exemplar pedestrian is just like you said, it would use a punch bag dummy. It was something that we used in place of a pedestrian to act like a pedestrian.
Now, when that exemplar pedestrian was placed in the rear passenger side area of the vehicle, what, if any, obstructions did you observe as far as just from a visual perspective, sort of turning your head or looking or cameras or anything else as far as where that exemplar was?
There were no obstructions.
Now, if that exemplar was placed directly next to vehicle versus feet away from the vehicle, what, if any, difference did you note as far as visibility was concerned?
Yeah, so if it was placed right next to the vehicle, it'd be blocked by the back pillar of the vehicle. If you place it like 5 feet away, you would be able to see the dummy and the cameras and also in the side mirrors.
So at a distance of at least 5 feet, it was fully visible from where you sat in the vehicle?
Yes.
Your Honor, with the court's permission, if we could, I would ask, I'm sorry, not sure what exhibit numbers they are, but the videos that were just introduced.
Okay.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have the exterior video first.
Just for the record, they are 6049.
Thank you, ma'am. Coming, if you could pause there for a moment. Paul, with respect to just for orientation purposes, if you could explain to the jury sort of where we are in relation to the Canton Police Department and where it was that you have to...
Yeah, so this is a view from the back of the Canton Police Department. So we are, so as you look at the Canton Police Department, we'd be on the left side of the Canton Police Department.
And as far as the vehicle in question, if you could, using the laser pointer, just direct the jury's attention where that is or where it's going to be in relation to camera angle.
Vehicle is right here.
Ms. Gilman, if you could press. If I could ask you to pause there. Trooper Paul, during these testing that you were conducting here with the acceleration, reverse braking, all of those, the highest speed that you reported during the course of that testing was 30 miles an hour, is that correct?
Yes.
And the highest speed that was attained within that VCH data for the second or the B of those two data sets, what was the highest miles per hour there?
24.
Now, with respect to the braking in this vehicle, what, if anything, was this vehicle equipped with?
Had ABS brakes, anti-lock brake system.
And with relation to anti-lock brake system or ABS, what, if any, relationship does that have with regards to braking and what is then visible on the paper?
It doesn't leave visible tire marks.
And why is that?
Due to as the brake is about to lock up, it transfers over to another tire, so it kind of rotates between tires, so the tires never fully lock up and slide across the pavement.
Now, in relation to ABS not leaving marks on the pavement, what, if any, relationship that have as far as sound different between ABS brakes and non-ABS?
Yeah, sound would be different because you would hear a car sliding across the pavement as opposed to just hard braking and engine slowing down.
As far as sort of screeching of braking and tire coming to a brake, what would you expect to hear with respect to ABS brakes?
There would be no screeching of the tires.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could press play from here. Thanks. Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish the other video of the interior of the vehicle?
Yes.
Gilman, if you could just pause it briefly. Again, Trooper Paul, with reference to what's up on the screen, if you could, just using the laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to the screen in the center of the dashboard and just as far as what parts of the screen are visible.
So right here is the reverse camera, 360 camera.
And as far as this particular portion of the interior of the vehicle, are we looking at what was done with regard to acceleration or braking tests, or are we looking at the visibility?
This is the visibility analysis.
I could ask you to just bring it back. Trooper Paul, as far as the, this is a closer up image of the screen that was visible in the center of the dash vehicle, is that correct?
Yes.
You could, using the laser pointer, this may be a little difficult to see. If you could, using the laser pointer, direct the jury's attention, what, if anything, you observe on this screen while the vehicle's in reverse now, correct?
Correct.
You could direct the jury's attention to what, if anything, you observe on this screen as the vehicle's in reverse with the exemplar pedestrian behind.
Yes, so this screen has now changed to a park assist screen, and it now shows a sensor for the back of the vehicle. And also, same here, the sensor starts popping up in a yellow line for behind the vehicle.
And in the action camera view
shows that's where our punch bag dummy was, and also shows where the sensor's backed up to on the bottom here.
And Ms. Gilman, for the record, this is about 34 seconds in, if you could press play here. Now, Paul, at some point over the course of your investigation or this case, did you become aware of ring videos from Mr. O'Keefe's residence at One Meadows Avenue?
Yes.
And specifically, have you had occasion to see a video depicting the defendant backing out of the garage as snow was coming down?
Yes.
I'm going to allow it.
Yeah.
Your Honor, with court's permission, if I could publish to the jury witness on the stand, Exhibit 6, video number 153.
Objection, may we approach?
Yes.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.